I missed the recording started, lady. Stupid AI
The
voice.
automated voice.
Sometimes they're comforting, you know? There was a period of time where I used to talk to my Google assistant because she was Australian and I called her Fiona. Like, okay, leave me alone. I had problems.
It's always a toss-up between the Australian Google Assistant and the British Google Assistant.
Yeah, for sure.
I like the British one. She sounds meaner.
I used to do the same thing for what game was that? Battlefield 1. When I was playing that, like actively at launch, just it had a bunch of different announcers, and I would always pick the like British chicks, which was fun
The one
for
that
me.
would definitely step on you.
Yes,
Yes.
absolutely.
Why buy a comic that might cost more than a dime? Come meet the brothers who are here to waste your time.
Welcome back to the Dime Comic Bros podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Spencer, joined by Jacob
Hello.
via a tenuous internet connection over
Yes.
many, many miles. Although, admittedly, you are physically closer to Colin than I think I've ever been right now.
He's about an hour away.
Ah, shucks. Close enough.
I'm closer to him than you are, though.
That is true. I don't think Jeff is the closest though, I think right now. I'm pretty confident they have been about 3 feet away from each other for the last like 12 hours.
More than 24 hours, but whatever. We're here to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes, we are. It'll be the last time for a while. The Guardians of the Galaxy by Gary or Jerry, I still have never figured out what his first name actually is. Duggan
Yeah, no idea.
Omnibus. It collects three trades, or three trades worth, I suppose, that were originally collected in three trades. That's how numbers work. It's all new Guardians of the Galaxy 1 through 12, and then, of course, going back to legacy numbering, because, of course, why not? 146 through 150. Yeah, this is a. This. Continues after is this after Infinity Wars or before Infinity Wars? Before this is the build up to Infinity Wars, and then
Okay.
this was in the fallout of the other one. Like with every single one of these books, it's just
Annihilation, maybe?
Annihilation was the first, like before the first one. That's that classic shit, which is insane to say that because that was 2007. That wasn't even that long ago. So it also, in addition to that, collects the Free Comic Book Day issue from I think it was 2017, which is the prelude of sorts, like the intro to this book, which I thought was a nice little nugget. It just kind of got you up to speed with where the team was, what they were getting up to, or I guess going to get up to. Before the actual run kicks off.
I had a big complaint about this run.
Oh boy.
This is a long one, so let me get it all out and then we can unpack it. Nothing changes from beginning to end in the story. So Gamora is all upset and she's trying to find a soul stone because she knows that a part of her soul is still stuck in the soul stone. And it's mentioned several times and shown several times, but the series ends and she still hasn't found it. Drax is having a pacifism crisis, and that isn't resolved at all. Peter isn't really doing anything. Rocket Raccoon becomes a professional space cop cringe, but that's kind of it. And then Groot is kind of the focus of this run with his problem, I guess. He eventually discovers so Groot is in a tiny shape and he can't regenerate, and everybody's like, wow, that's weird. And we see in the background kind of what's happening, and we get an explanation of why. He eventually discovers the copies of himself that are tapping his health, but there's no clear resolution, especially with the guy that's doing it. There's plenty of problems presented for the crew to overcome, but they don't do anything with it. The run just ends.
I second that observation slash complaint. It didn't bother me very much. I don't know why, though. I don't know if it's just because this run had a really consistent like list of artists working on it, even though it got canceled kind of abruptly, and all of the resolution is in a tie-in event, or probably like three tie-in events, to be honest. The fact that nothing happened didn't really bug me when it was happening. I found each plot line interesting, for the most part. And by the time I was done with the book, it's not that big. I was like, that was fun. And I wasn't left thinking it didn't feel like hollow or like not well thought out or anything. But you're right. Almost nothing actually got resolved.
It felt like it just got axed overnight. And that was really frustrating because most of the plot lines were really interesting. I wanted to know why Groot wasn't regenerating and why Drax was being a pacifist and what was going to happen with that. What if he isn't the Destroyer anymore and he moves on from that name? All really good stuff, but nothing happened.
Yeah, it is very strange.
It was frustrating, too, that the cast was always getting messed with. The second to last issue introduces Cosmo out of the blue. I have no idea where he came from. The last issue suddenly introduced Adam Warlock, and it only complicates the finale. They legit knew they were canceled, and they introduced another character to the team. There's a side plot about Richard Rider's brother becoming a Talon bad guy, and nothing happens with that. We see him fight them, and there's no resolution. Ant-Man is intentionally written to be lame, and he becomes part of the team for a bit. I'm assuming the lameness is just a carryover from the movies, but I don't know. It's just...
I'm not super familiar with that particular Ant-Man comic wise, so I would assume he's just kind of like that. I don't know. Yeah. I have not read most of that.
But all of that was on top of the original Guardians cast already. They just kept throwing more people in.
It is so weird to think about that because, now that you're saying it out loud, it's like, oh, shit, that was a lot of stuff to kind of throw in there right at the end. But none of it, really occurred to me while I was reading. The issues definitely felt smaller, and I wasn't in love with the art for the majority of this book. It was all solid. It just wasn't really my style, I guess. It was just going for a vibe that isn't what I would have picked. So
on that vibe, you even said it to me, and I fully agree. All of the voices of the characters you could read in the voices of the actors. It just feels like a port of the movies.
It does, which is a shame because I do think that this is, despite it being canceled, which you did find confirmation on that, it was actually canceled at the end. And then all the plot lines were shoved into the next upcoming event book, which seems to always happen. Aside from that point, this run felt the most left alone in outside of the Abnett and Lanning book. Even with Cates and Ewing and with Bendis, or at least the half of Bendis' stuff that we've read so far, it's a different wave pattern of when the events get involved, but they always editorial always gets involved somewhere. And this just feels like they just killed the book and that was about it. None of this really seemed super direct meddling. There weren't any crossover events or issues outside of the Free Comic Book Day issue. And then clearly the direct we are setting up in Infinity Wars. Obviously, that's the stuff going on in the background about where are all the goddamn gems at. You can see where the road is going, but it's not like the book just got derailed by some big thing. It just the train track stopped. it's really weird because this is, where is this timeline wise? 18s. This is right before the Kate's run, and I'm gonna go back to that, I think. But I don't feel like there's much carryover, like, directly. Obviously, most of the characters are the same, but most of that run was dealing with the events of Infinity Wars, not, I don't know, this run. That, I don't know. It's just weird. That was my biggest note, I guess, in general, was, like, this one just felt weird. I feel better about it. I have a lot less, direct criticisms. I enjoyed it a lot more, but something definitely felt weird.
I came out of the gate swinging, and it's not because I didn't like it. It was just, I was reading it, like, where is this going? Oh, off a cliff. Cool. Like, it looked really, really good. I kind of liked that I could read the characters in the voices of the actors. It made it, I don't know, homogeneous, I guess. It made it easier to picture instead of, like, having, we've had a couple where Rocket Raccoon especially is very, very different. It's like, this is weird, and it takes a couple issues to get used to it, but it looked really good. I enjoyed the artwork in this book, and it was pretty cohesive. It was a fun read, and a lot of the ideas were really good. It's just a huge bummer that it just got axed.
It is super weird. I don't necessarily mean, like, reading it in the characters' voices inherently is a bad thing. I think in this run, it is mostly a good thing. Like, it really depends on the run and, like, I guess what character. This more just felt like a clone of kind of some of the energy going on in the movies without the gravitas or context that the movies have, or even I would argue some of the Bendis stuff had when it was at its better period so far. Like, it felt like it was more thorough, or like imbued with more potential meaning during its good parts anyways. Whereas this just kind of feels like, I don't want to say the content word, but it kind of feels like the content word, which is weird because, again, I don't have a lot of, like, super direct criticisms. I would be more than happy to read this again, but, like, it didn't get any, I didn't get anything, like, emotionally cohesive out of it or interesting, really. Not that everything necessarily has to do that, but even with the other runs, even the bad sections of those runs, they always feel like they have some personal stake in it, and this one felt very, very, very surface level. Outside of, I would say, the Gamora plotline, the one issue where they give you her background, which of course is collected differently in the trades than it was published, and then the omnibus is done in the actual reading order. It's really weird. Like, aside from that one issue, which I do think has a really nice artistic change to it that I think works really well, like, all the stuff with the Soul Stone is the more intriguing, like, line of thinking for me. But outside of that, the rest of it's just, like, it's kind of like plot stuff. I don't know if that made any semblance of sense. It's just, like, I would go back to this, but that's because it didn't take anything from me to read. It was fairly easy reading in the literal sense because the art was good to look at and the words flowed well, but also because there wasn't a lot of, like, the Abnett and Lanning stuff, and then the first half of the Ewing stuff really got into, like, the nitty-gritty of Peter and Richard and Gamora's, like, weird relationships and the war stuff and, like, their very bizarre emotional entanglements. And that stuff is really fucking awesome. And there's large sections of the Kate's run, pretty much everywhere, to be honest, like, where, like, Rocket and Groot's relationship is really vital and feels tangible. And they're there and they're plot relevant in this book, but they just kind of feel like cartoons.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
It might just be a tonal thing. Like, it's just odd. Even in direct comparison to, like, I would say the current run, when I talked about it not that long ago, the first, like, five or six issues or whatever, kind of felt like it was to superimpose a bunch of names. It that run that's still currently ongoing, what I read of it kind of felt like this run, but done by someone who thinks that they're doing the older runs. Like the new run is so self-serious and like trying to be emotional, but it's done in a very over-the-top, goofy, cartoony, surface level style, and that's really off-putting for me. Like, genuinely, I will go back to that to try it again, but holy cow, that was a very tumultuous few issues. Whereas at least this run is like, it seems to know that it's surface level, and there's not anything inherently wrong with that. It's just kind of a somewhat of a letdown, because I was after the first Bendis omnibus where it was high, low, high, low, high, low. And like some of those highs were pretty dang high that got me very engaged. This is just like kooky adventures. And I don't know, for like the main Guardians run, I don't know if that's the best approach. When it's the, you know, some side run with Rocket and Groot for a couple of issues, that makes sense. But like the whole run kind of feels like this. It's very consequence free, and I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know. Very strange.
The last few issues where they do temporarily join the new Nova Corps, I did find quite entertaining, like very funny. Like I laughed. I indeed lulled multiple times just with the shenanigans, like to, you know, I guess be a hypocrite here, like it was too dumb and silly, but watching Rocket put on a Nova Corps uniform is adorable. So yes. You know, like
it was weird too that he ate like being a cop. It felt like there was an explanation missing. Like, why would he enjoy being that guy when he likes breaking the rules? It seemed like a hard switch. I didn't get it.
I think it's just because he likes being an asshole to everybody else. I mean, we all know somebody who will bend all of the rules for themselves, but they love snitching on people because it gives them a sense of authority over them. Like, Rocket was a cop originally. Like, we you know, way back. And then that connects to
he was a ranger.
It's the same thing. Shut up. He was a ranger on a planet of animals. That's a cop. Like, and that connects with that those couple of issues where he's pulls out his random detective skills from. That was the Ewing run, right?
I think maybe.
Nah. Well, yeah. it comes up sometimes and it does get referenced, but like I think you're right. I think it needed more elaboration. I think that there is kind of a through line there. They just didn't say it and I like inferred it because I've been reading so much of this stuff lately.
Any last thoughts on Guardians?
This is just a weird one.
Yep.
It's a positive weird. Like, hands down, it was pretty coherent. Most of the art is pretty good. It's just not really up my alley. It was easy to read. I think the 4 or 5 flashback, quote unquote, issues that explain each character and where they came from recently were all like definitely highlights of, I think that would be trade 2. Roughly, as just the one-off artist does. Star-Lord does a time travel adventure to get a new mixtape from the 80s. Like, I liked those quite a lot. But yeah, it's just weird.
This is one of the books that comes up for people asking where to start reading Guardians of the Galaxy, which is rough. Despite what we've just been saying, but also because the book is hard to find. I got it through a seller on Amazon for $112, and the cover price is $75.
I still cannot believe you did that. Even the cover price of $75 is kind of pushing it. It is legally classified as an omnibus because it says so on the spine, but this is nearly identical in size to the Ewing and Cates books. It's a few issues longer, not by much.
I think Ewing was longer, actually, and Keats is definitely shorter.
Yeah, Keats was, I think, only 12, and then Ewing, because Keats was two trades, Ewing, I think, was three, maybe four, and then this is three. It's so weird. Like, I would agree it should be an omnibus. It's enough issues, and it's the right size physical book. But 75 cover is pretty pricey. And then you, of course, because you're very silly and had to have a matching hardcover, you know, you took some of my aspects in that moment instead of just buying the trades because they were cheaper.
I don't think they were, though. It added up to be really close. I think what actually got me was shipping. I didn't get free shipping on it because it was from a private seller. Ugh. So that's what stuck me.
That's just so bizarre. Like, it is weird because this was a twice, at least for part of it, this was a twice a month comic, right?
Whatever that screenshot said, it was the dual published, I think is what it said. I don't know what that means.
I think it just means it's like a biweekly thing, because that's usually only the only books that I can think of that consistently get like bi-monthly pushes is like Action Comics and Detective Comics and Batman, and only sometimes. They don't do that consistently. Those are usually still a monthly book. So the fact that this somehow got like, I don't know why they would have done that. No wonder it kind of crashed and had to get canceled. They were pumping out issues like crazy. It's just bad business decision on that front.
Well, moving on, I am going to talk about two movies I've watched. One of them is, let me find it again, hold please, A History of Violence, the 2005 David Cronenberg crime thriller, I guess, starring Viggo Mortensen. And the other one is Eastern Promises, the 2007 mafia crime thriller directed by David Cronenberg, starring Viggo Mortensen. These were definitely movies. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. Please tune in next week. I didn't know when I watched both of these within a week of each other that they were connected. I was just like looking around for movies. I was like, ooh, Viggo. I like Viggo. He's a great actor. And watched it and said, wow, that was a movie. And then I did it again. Both of them, I walked away thinking, whoever made this saw or grew up on mafia movies and was like, damn, someday I'm gonna make a movie like that. And then tried to do it, because all the plot points are there, but it doesn't do anything extra. It is the most A to B to C. And it's frustrating, because there's a especially in Eastern Promises, there's a lot of acting potential. Viggo's doing his best. Naomi Watts is doing her best. I forget the bad guy. The bad guy was great. But there's just nothing there. The more memorable one is Eastern Promises. I think there were a couple extra plot points in that to keep it somewhat more interesting, but also one of the funniest scenes I've seen in a movie. The mob tries to whack Viggo while he's in a public shower. And so he's wrestling these two tall, fat hitmen while his balls are hanging out. It's so funny. I don't think it was intended to be funny, but I saw plenty of comments online agreeing with me.
That is super weird.
Yeah, seeing Viggo's balls is one of the high points of these two movies, so take that for what it is.
I Will. And you can't stop me.
I gave them both 3 out of 5 stars because they're just bland movie. Movie is movie.
It's super weird that this must be like Cronenberg's like second brain worm outside of doing body horror, because he must have just grown up on like mob movies or something. And it's like, I can do that. And then turns out not really. And it's super weird because in his most recent, unless I'm mistaken, Crimes of the Future, the new one, does have a lot of like crime elements. It's a weird movie, but I feel like you might enjoy those aspects more now that he's, I would assume, had a lot of time to work on that skill. Also starring Viggo Mortensen. I wonder how those two became friends. That's so weird because he's been in almost every one of Cronenberg's movies post like 2000.
History of Violence also had some yikesy stuff, and it was like Cronenberg had to make a press conference or whatever and be like, no, it's implied that it's not yikesy because of this. I don't believe it, man.
I'm gonna go look that up later. Good after show research. I love reading about racism. Probably
I watched History of Violence with other people, and Viggo goes and kills the bad guy in a big fight and then comes home and sits down at the table, and then that's the end of the movie. And everybody around me was like, well, that was a shit ending. It was like a decent enough movie, but it was like almost like they didn't even know how to end the movie. They're like, well, now what? I don't know. He goes home.
That is super weird. So when you say these two are connected, do you mean it's just Cronenberg and Viggo doing a crime movie, or yes. Do you mean, okay, so yes. you do not mean that they are a sequel of one another?
No.
They just share elements.
Yes. I thought I made that clear when I was with my opening sentence, the date, the director, the actor, the themes.
Well, I'm stupid, so take that into account.
Maybe I didn't make the joke well enough. What did you do this week, Mr. Cupstache?
The wiener is crawling up my leg right now. She's just wienering all over the place.
You should pet your wiener.
I'm trying to not pet the wiener because giving her attention makes her more prone to do it, but also I need her to stop. And sometimes if you do it, she'll stop.
Petting the wiener gets wiener hairs in your nose, and you don't want wiener hair in your nose.
At least I'm not whacking off Viggo Mortensen in the shower. Don't let that ginger beer go up. If that ginger beer goes out your nose, it's not my fault.
What did you do this week?
I also had a bit of a themed week, I suppose, unintentionally. I read Green Lantern Volume 1 back in action. It is the current run, or the first trade of the current run, written by Jeremy Adams with art by Zermencio, I think is how you say his last name, or his name. I don't know, man. I followed this as it was coming out. And then issue 6 was a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago. I don't know. Whatever. This is the first trade's worth. Long story short, after the events of Dark Crisis, don't ask, Hal Jordan gets sent/banished to Earth because the Guardians of Oa are all, we don't like Earth anymore, and all the Earth Guardians can go fuck themselves. John, Kyle, Guy, etc., they all get shoot away and the rings taken away and whatever. Hal, being the hot-headed crazy man that he is, hotwires a ring, steals it, and then fucks off to Earth when this interplanetary, intergalactic like quarantine basically happens. Like, Earth is just off limits. None of the Green Lanterns are supposed to be active there, and all the Green Lanterns that are currently active should not go near Earth. You know, space politics, it'd be like that. But Hal, like I said, stole a ring and is doing shit with it, which is crazy. What it says, the subtitle is Back in Action, and I have to agree with that as like a general vibe. I actually think it's a really good subtitle for this. It's not like Green Lantern Rebirth tiers of like getting back to basics, because the past few Green Lantern runs have been fantastic. There's no like we need to go back to our roots type crap. It's just this is very stripped down and back to basics in a good sense. It's just getting back in touch with the character a little bit more directly. It's also a lot more new reader friendly, so very easy to pick up without context. So Hal is on Earth. It turns out Sinestro is also on Earth because reasons. Something happened there. He doesn't have a ring, or he might have a ring. It's confusing. He eventually, I think, corrupts Hal's ring into a Yellow Lantern ring, or he steals one. It's a little weird. And then basically says, I'm going to nuke Earth if you guys don't get scared of me, because then the scared juice will go into my scary ring and I'll be the big bad guy again. I'm very much so dramatizing that, but it was a pretty cool like few issue arc. Of course they have a big fight, and of course Hal wins, but it was also one of the few times in recent memory I can think of Sinestro being outside of like a Legion of Doom setting. He's been I would say since like late New 52, where they really did a lot with his character. Sinestro is just a great villain in general, but like he gets pushed further away from Hal Jordan sometimes, and I don't think that's always a good idea. He can become more of just a bigger scale type villain, and that's fine. He works well with like Lex Luthor and blah 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 blah. But when it's just him and Hal having an argument in a diner, I think it works really really well. And this arc has that quite a bit. Or enough anyways. Also, Hal is apparently making a construct of Kilowog for the entirety of this run. There's like a Kilowog, you know, the boy, the homeboy, the big pig boy is with him on Earth, because I guess why not? Like, it just starts off that way. And it's revealed through the run. Kilowog is apparently dead. So he's just projecting literally a dead guy in his living room, because I would assume he's all depressed and lonely and something happened. There's a lot of backstory to this that I don't know, and I don't want to necessarily. I don't know if it'll be revealed later on, or it's just because I didn't read Dark Crisis and I don't really care, but it felt self-contained enough where I didn't need that context. It was like, oh, Hal is upset and one of his best friends is, I guess, dead right now. So why wouldn't he have his ghost basically in the living room? You raised your hand. It also features Carol. What is her last name? Carol. Why am I blanking? What is going on?
Ferris?
Thank you. Yes, Ferris. There we go. I'm very slow today. She's engaged to somebody else, so there's also a lot of like romance stuff going on. Hal's all, no, but you should be with me because I'm me and you love me. But and then she's like, haha, but then you'll leave again and whatever. So a lot of like, I would say a very good balance between plot and basically melodrama. I don't say that in a negative sense. Green Lantern always has a level of melodrama to it, and I think it's balanced pretty well here, because Sinestro ends up getting involved with Ferris and is like gonna steal their planes to nuke the Earth or whatever. Like, so they actually tie the plots together pretty well. And the art in this book is fantastic, just across the board. The costume designs are great. Almost every Green Lantern outfit like ever has always looked good, but I swear they keep finding new ways to make these boys look just pristine. It's incredible. So the trade version of this collects issues 1 through 6, which is the first arc, as well as Green Lantern Night Terrors 1 and 2. So a crossover that happened during that time was the Night Terrors event. I did not read those, and I will eventually check them out. I just don't have any direct interest. I know for a fact they don't tie into the main book, which is why I appreciate it. The book just went on hiatus those months, and then they gave them a different subtitle. So, like, they're still technically in the chronology. I'm assuming when you pick up this trade or hardcover or whatever, they'll be put in the correct order. But it wasn't like when I said I want Green Lantern on my pull list, they didn't then pull the Night Terrors 2 months. They just skipped those because they were subtitled differently or whatever, which I think was cool. It might just be because my local shop is great and they assumed I didn't want any of that event junk. So this is really good. There isn't a lot more to it in that sense. They also had backup sections, which introduced my second topic, which I'll get to in a minute, as well as introducing the idea of the Sinestro has a son, because of course he does, on some planet who's like a little 10-year-old shithead slave boy who's like, my dad's one of the cool guys, I'm gonna make sure everybody knows, which is setting up what we now know, because we discussed it a little while ago on the news, Sinister Sons, where the son of Zod and Sinestro are gonna like team up, and Peter J. Tomasi, I'm stupid, is writing that book. Like, it's a parallel to the Super Sons book he did, which is cool. Like, all that stuff. So that was set up in this run as well, which is pretty cool. They're just little backup sections. I enjoyed it. I liked reading it issue to issue. I will pick up the trades eventually. I'm just going to see how they're collected.
What do you think you spent on this?
So 6 issues, they're $4 a piece. So $24. I can math. The trade, I would say yes. I enjoy reading them month to month. The trade is going to be $20 apparently for the paperback, and that also includes the 2 Night Terrors issues, which is obviously a better deal. It's always a better deal to get paperbacks or hardcovers or whatever. But I definitely enjoyed having it on my pull list. I just decided to drop it after the 6 issues because there's only so many things I can read concurrently, especially if they're all good and I just don't have any interesting thoughts about them. It's like, it's just good. It's The Flash issue 94. And it's like, I've been here since issue 1. It's just good. Like, I have nothing to contribute to this conversation. So I just kind of dropped it. But I'm definitely looking forward to seeing how more of this turns out. What else do you have, boy?
I watched a movie. I watched this movie, Upgrade, from 2018. It is directed by a Lee, or maybe Leah, 1L, but I don't know. And it stars Logan Marshall Green.
It's Lee 1L. And this movie is fucking amazing.
A couple of other people. There's a guy in a cyberpunk future and he thinks technology bad. He makes gas cars go vroom and he probably plays records and cassette tapes. while everybody else has like the Musk guy's brain chips in their brain and their hands and their dicks probably. So he's put in a position where he needs to accept technology to get revenge on the bad guys, and plot thickens from there. I really enjoyed this. There's a lot of good lighting. I just read his name. The star does really, really well. Not just delivering his lines, but also moving his body through the movie. He is a quadriplegic that gets a chip that lets him move again. And there was a lot of effort put into how he moves after he gets the chip. It's not natural. It looks robotic because it's the chip that's driving his meat armor, basically.
Then he gets magic kung fu skills and he can punch real hard.
The magic kung fu skills look really cool. And they did a lot of work with the cinematography to make it not look messed with. Like, it looked pretty slick. There was a lot of camera work with, like, he would stand up from laying on his back in a weird way, and the camera would move with his body so that he stays in the frame exactly the same way and the room moves around. Or, like, he does flips and the camera follows him so that he's not moving but the room is. Like, all kinds of cool stuff. It looks super cool.
If you had to guess what genre Lee Whannell directs that is not action, what would you guess it is?
Nicholas Sparks love romance shit.
No, horror movies. And
no kid.
That's why it has the edge that it does. It's like Terminator, but what if you were the Terminator inside the Terminator's head?
Wow.
It's got some
wacky. I thought it would be something completely unrelated. I thought you were going to say, like, High School Musical 3 or something.
No, that's just why this movie's so bizarre, because it's like, it's very body horror-esque, like, in your own head, in a way. It just doesn't, like, physically show it a lot, but, like, the way that it's shot is, like, kind of terrifying. Like,
it's really cool.
It is wicked cool, but just imagine that being you and just being, like, completely out of control of your own body, doing, like, all sorts of crazy shit. It's like, what the it's so cool.
So there was some body horror things, like a murder where a guy's head lands on a shard of glass or something, but also there were just subtle body horror things. Like, a bunch of the bad guys have gun implants in their arm where the barrel is, like, the end of their wrist sticking out of their palm, kind of. And they could load the shells in, like, where their elbow is and, like, just point their arm kind of like Iron Man. And it's really gross to think about, but it looks super cool. Unfortunately, the plot is kind of predictable. As soon as the tragedy happens, I knew what was going on. It took a twist after that was cool, and I should have seen coming. But predicting the plot doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad plot. This is a fun movie and really well made. I really enjoyed it. I gave it 4 out of 5 stars, and it's currently sitting at the top of my list for the year.
Well, that's because you haven't seen Dune 2 yet.
True story. I told Colin yesterday that someone on this trip shattered my world. Apparently, there's fake IMAX, and the IMAX that we go to is fake. There are only 19 real IMAXs in the country, and one of them is less than an hour drive away from me. So we're trying to go see Dune 2 in real 70 millimeter IMAX.
I remembered looking into that. It's basically just because it's done digitally. It's still IMAX, but it's digital IMAX instead of the 75 millimeter. Like, they send you the ginormous film canister that's as big as 10 people wide or whatever, which is ludicrous.
Right. It's like 600 pounds or something for a normal movie, and then you have Dune 2.
Yeah, I remember there was a lot of pictures of, like, how large the Oppenheimer ones were. It's fucking ridiculous.
All right. Well, if it's only digital or not, I don't give a crap.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is. I might be wrong, but I'm fairly confident. You should see that, though, because it would be cool. So I read also More Green and More Green Lantern. Green Lantern War Journal, Volume 1, Contagion. This was set up in the first 3 issues of Green Lantern, the other one. it's written by Philip Kennedy Johnson and has art done by your mom. Crap. I just remembered who his name was. The name. Montos. There we go. Who does the art. It consists of, again, take into context all of the Green Lantern Earth is on quarantine stuff and whatever. John Stewart goes back home to live with his mom, who has either Alzheimer's or dementia. I can barely remember the real life difference between the two of them, but she has that. So he's like helping her out. John's in his 40s now, I think. So he's getting up there, but like, you know, he's still, you know, just massive fucking unit. So he's helping her out. She's elderly and losing her marbles and stuff. So he's literally like doing housework and like, I'm going to build you a good porch, mom. And like doing really nice stuff like that for the first two issues or so. In another universe, because of course, there's threat of some sort. It's a little hazy. I do want to look more into the details on this. Basically, it's kind of like the rot, like from like Swamp Thing lore. It's kind of like the black, the rot, but like for Green Lanterns and the emotional spectrum, they're purple, which is weird. I don't know if they're connected to anything else. I have yet to really look into it too much. I think it might be relevant to some upcoming event or whatever. But there's this like ongoing
that
invasion.
What is it, Geoff Johns run?
I know what you're thinking of. No, it's not that. It has nothing to do with the Black Lanterns
the
now.
The purple was definitely in there, though.
I don't know.
I remember it as from that.
I don't know. It's called the Radiant Black, but it's purple. I don't know. It's weird. Basically, in another universe, this force, I guess, like wipes out the entirety of the Lanterns. But on that Earth, John is the bestest Green Lantern, which is obviously Hal, dumbass. But it's John for some reason. And he's, you know, just old grizzled, you know, the goated with the sauce version that every alternate universe has of your favorite character. And then he dies, I think, and sends one of the random lanterns that he's working with to go to another Earth to find a John Stewart because, you know, it's Green Lantern, so they all have the power of will and stuff. And he's like, you know, if I could do what I could do here, then I'm assuming every other John Stewart could probably do the same thing. So go find another one, dumbass, and then go fix this. We have just I genuinely cannot remember this character's name. He's totally fine. I just don't remember him. He's not very exciting. Who comes from said other universe. He finds our John Stewart, eventually recruits him into going into space to go fix all these problems. The Radiant Black is coming to Earth because reasons, blah blah blah. They have like a personal vendetta against John Stewart because in this other universe he was like their greatest adversary, blah 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 blah. So when they come to this universe, they're all mad at him. He's like, I don't even know who the fuck you are, but I'll still kick your ass. All of the main plot stuff is actually the least interesting. It's totally fine, there's nothing wrong with it. I just, in the first six issues, it didn't I wouldn't say the main driving force for me wasn't the primary plot. It was actually the secondary stuff, which was about John and his mom and John's relationship with Steel, you know, Steel, the guy, and Steelworks, the company. Henry Irons ends up offering him like a job to come live in Metropolis and stuff so he can help pay for his mom's medical bills. And, you know, superheroes being superheroes and being like, hey, it's me, your boy. I'm going to help you out. We're going to do a thing. And he's like, no, I'm going to mow lawns to pay for my mom's cancer treatment or whatever. You know how it is. There's like a two-issue detour. They also have like a Train to Busan moment where the Radiant Black try to take over a subway train or like a some sort of above-ground train. Like a those things. They're cool and good, and I like them. They take people from a place to another. They're a type of train, but they're not train, whatever. Tram, whatever the fuck. They're above the you know what I'm talking about?
It could be a T, it could be the bullet, it could be a train, because those are above ground.
It's whatever. It's the one that's on like a not like a platform, kind of like a platform. Like I think it might be the T. Like whatever the fuck it is. It's they usually span like the entirety of the city. Obviously it's a train, but like whatever. Public transit. It's good. I like it. So they try to take over, like, and get John while he's with his mom, and he's all, no, you're not going to go near my mom, but on a train. And because the Radiant Black are like zombies, but not really, but they're kind of like zombies, but also they're purple. Don't ask questions. It's like Train to Busan was clearly what it was trying to ape, which I thought was pretty neat, because Train to Busan is a fucking awesome movie. I just thought it was a nice homage, like, issue. They eventually end up recruiting some more Green Lanterns. They go fight the thing real good because John Stewart is the bestest guy because he's got the power of will. Yeah, no, you know how these books work. Emotions be strong like that. Also, he gets a new suit at the end, and it's freaking amazing. Like I said, I already said that the suits look good, but holy shit, the suits look good. Also, he creates a ring out of sheer willpower. He doesn't go find one. He just makes one with his brain. Like, he doesn't physically make one, even though he could, because he's an engineer and an architect and he's got a big brain. He's like, I really want it. And then, poof, oh, look, it's a ring. So the ring itself is a construct. It's super freaking cool. It does a really good job of integrating John's architect, like, Air Force brain. Almost every run does, but like being able to distinguish between the different Green Lanterns and like what they are like is really important. The way that they use their constructs is very relevant, and this one did it a lot. It was very, I'm gonna build a thing with my brain, you know, here's a, instead of just making a building poof out of nowhere, I'm gonna construct the building in front of you and you're still gonna hit it type, like, I am brain god stuff. It's very silly, but like, who cares. Lots of machine guns too, obviously, because guns, they use engineering. Hello. Really good. It's about on the same like playing field as the other Green Lantern book. Like I said, it sprung out of that one. I think the two books are going to intersect back together for a crossover event at some point. I just don't know when. Same deal goes for this one. I dropped off of this one after 6 issues because I just wanted to get like the first trades worth. I'm very satisfied with this. I think this one might be a little bit above the other one, to be honest. Same thing goes for the art. It's amazing. These two things, like, back to back, oh my gosh, it's so good. And this book wasn't out yet when Night Terrors happened, so it's only the 6 issues, which is great. And I also would have spent $4 on each of those. But the trade, I think, is going to have a cover price of 20, but you can kind of pick it up beforehand for, like, 16, and that's definitely worth it.
That is the show. Thank you for listening. Thank you to our patrons, Caitlin and Jeff Lawrence, for making it possible for us to continue making shows. They went to patreon.com/Dime Comic Bros Network and signed up under one of the 4 tiers that they found available there. Please consider giving us money. We appreciate it. We give our money to Jetpack Comics and Games in downtown Rochester, New Hampshire. They have comics and games and other things. They deserve your money.
I think you have this script written on the inside of your eyelids, because anytime you try to recite it, you close your eyes and get like really focused, like you're reading the Star Wars like opening crawl text, but through your eyes.
I'm working on saying it quicker, but also enunciating everything, so I'm not just blah, 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 trying to make it understandable as I go quicker.
Zoom. Also, subscribe to our free Substack newsletter, where you get recaps of all of our episodes, along with visual aids. Not visual aids, but visual aids. You know how it is.
The cool thing about Substack is that it comes to your email. If you have an email, please email us at dimecomicbros@gmail.com.
Look at that. Look at that transition.
Interaction.
Smooth. We do love that.
Thank you.
Also, make sure to go support.
Go to YouTube. And vote on the things, because apparently that is popular, more popular even than the show itself.
I don't understand what's going on with the YouTube polls, man. It's so confusing. Also, Colin will be back very shortly, so make sure you go support Colin. He's taken the past like 6 months off of this show to work on his book, which is out now. In this very moment, he is physically inside a convention hall trying to sell it and get all the monies. So you should give him your monies and get the book, because it's good. Go to his Patreon and his Instagram and stuff. It's all linked in the comments and the description and the shit. You know how it goes. He will be back 2 weeks from now, Wait. I know how numbers like work. That. Yes, 2 weeks from now, Colin will return, finally, and we shall be whole again.
Next week is news, I think?
Yes, it'll be the news, baby. And then we will finally be whole again. Colin will make us whole.